It's 5 p.m. and this is IC Radio. Hello and welcome to the 31st of April's edition of iScience Radio. April Fools! It's actually, of course, the 1st of April. On today's show, we will be discussing the environmental and social issues of the fashion industry. However, do not worry, it's not all doom and gloom. We're going to be discussing what actions you can take to combat fast fashion and become more sustainable. Please join the discussion by sending a message at icradio.com/contact. Stay with us between now and 6 p.m, right here on IC Radio.
The radio show where we talk about science, we have fun with science, and we play some really cool records. This is iScience Radio.
I'm Kathy Grenville, your iScience Radio editor today. Hilary and Andrew are producing the show, and I'm joined in the studio by Rachel.
Hi.
Hannah.
Hello.
And Katie.
Good afternoon.
So, how's everyone today?
Good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, doing pretty good.
Excited to talk about sustainable fashion?
Can't wait.
I am. I just hope there's no more April Fool's jokes in the show.
Oh,
Kathy.
I can't promise you that, Katie. I can't promise you that.
There's been so much false hope on social media today.
Has anyone actually seen any April Fools?
Yeah. So the union said that instead of curly fries, they were going to be serving smiley faces.
What?
Which would have been great.
I love smiley faces.
It's all false hope. It's all false hope.
Oh, well, anyway. But first, as usual, it's time to catch up with the latest science headlines from iScience News Team. Today's news editor is Julia.
This is iScience Radio News.
Hi everyone, I'm Julia, filling in for Madeline as news editor for iScience, and I'm here with Gina from the news team to give you a short roundup of the hot topics this week.
First up, the mystery source of a proton spin has been found. Researchers have confirmed that some of the subatomic particle spin comes from a frothing sea of quarks and antiquarks inside of the proton. The new result was made by slamming protons together at a particle accelerator in New York called the Relativistic Heavy Iron Collider. The researchers were surprised to find that a rare type of antiquark adds more to the proton spin than one of the more common types of antiquarks.
Next, 71-year-old Jo Cameron finally knows why she has lived a virtually pain-free life. Researchers in London found two mutations in her genetic code that together suppress pain and anxiety, expedite healing, and cause forgetfulness. One mutation in a gene called FA is relatively common in the population, but the other is a previously unheard of deletion in a nearby gene the researchers have named FA out. Though not the only person in the world who does not feel pain, this combination of genes is what makes Ms. Cameron's case unique. Researchers hope that studying FA out will provide insights into the pain system and eventually lead to the creation of more effective pain interventions.
And finally, NASA had hoped to make history this week with the first ever all-female team of astronauts taking part in a spacewalk, but the plan has been scrapped. It turned out that both women needed a medium-sized spacesuit, but only one was available. The complication arose because in space, without the force of gravity, even an adult can grow up to 3 inches taller, causing the spacesuit astronaut Anna McLean took with her to no longer fit. She stayed behind as Christina Koch did the spacewalk with a male colleague. It seems history will have to wait.
And that's all we've got time for here. Tune in next week for more science news.
So, thank you to the iScience News team. There were some really interesting pieces there. What did everyone think of the lady who can't feel pain?
Madness. I think it's terrifying if you put your hand near fire or something, can't feel it, but don't realise you can't feel it.
Yeah, but I mean, I think she's quite later on in her life, so I think she's in her 70s, so they've only just figured it out. So, and it was because she was saying, oh, no, it's fine. She was having, I think it was like hip replacements or something.
Yes.
And she was like, oh no, I just need a paracetamol or something for that. And everyone was like, what?
Well, she didn't feel any pain during her childbirth either,
yeah.
Apparently.
Wow. I mean, that sounds like bliss, yeah. But I mean...
but so, has she only just realised then? So she's had this condition all her life, but she didn't know what was causing it until now?
Yeah.
I don't think she even knew that she had a condition. Oh. She never knew that there was anything abnormal about it. I guess if you've been born with it, then it just feels normal.
Anyway, we digress. let's get on to the topic of fashion. So, in Britain, more than 300,000 tons of clothes end up in landfill every year. It's the fastest growing category of waste in the country. But this is a global problem. Expanding middle classes and emerging markets are hungry for more and cheaper fashion. It's estimated that by 2050, global clothing sales can more than triple. Fast fashion seems like a self-explanatory term. Low-cost clothes that follow all the trends and won't last, typically, for longer than a year or two. It's associated with the view that clothes are made to throw away, made for a season and not for life. This combination of cheap and disposable clothes leads to ethically dubious practices and dangerous environmental ones. These practices are often maintained by cheap, high street clothing. Expensive designer labels are often thought of as well made and therefore don't come with the same unethical associations. However, this is not the case. Burberry recently came under scrutinisation as their desire not to sell discounted clothes in order to maintain brand image led them to burn thousands of excess stock. Designers outsource cheap labour to developing countries as much as high street ones do. It seems that almost no one is safe from the effects of fast fashion, no matter how much you pay. Although it wasn't always like this. Fashion, believe it or not, didn't used to be fast. In the 19th century, people spent 15% of their income on clothes. Now, the average person in Britain spends 6.7% of their income on clothing, less than half of what we spent only a few hundred years ago. But the modern day Brit has far more clothes than ever before, buying on average a jaw-dropping 60 new items of clothing per year in 2015. This highlights a monumental shift from spending more and buying less to spending a fraction of the price and gaining an unprecedented amount of clothes in return. So early on today, I asked some of the SciComm students how many litres it would take to produce a single pair of jeans. Let's listen to their answers. How many litres of water do you think it takes to produce a single pair of jeans?
A single pair of jeans? It's a good question. I will go with 200 litres of water for a pair of jeans.
36? Oh, I know that it's a lot, but I don't know exactly. I'm just going to guess, like... Oh, I don't know, like a bathtub? No, it's probably way more. I don't know. Thanks.
12,000.
Thank you.
I have no idea. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, you have to wash the cotton, and then you have to wash after the dye's been in. Five?
Eight. Well, 100? I would say, like, maybe 5. I'm going to say maybe 20 litres.
How many litres of water do you think it takes to produce a single pair of... Do you know? I'm not going to ask. How many litres of water do you think it takes to produce a single pair of jeans?
Oh, I listened to a podcast, and I don't remember the exact one, but I know it's a lot. Like, I'm going to go with 500. No, more than that? I mean, I'm being
Katie, stop.
I'm going to go with 500 liters. No, that seems small. 1,000.
So, does anyone actually know the answer? I know you do, Katie, so I'm going to exclude you from this. Yes. Do you guys know how many litres of water it takes to produce a single pair of jeans?
I think it's more than anyone said, but I don't know how much it is.
You are correct.
Okay.
I'm a bit worried as well. I don't want it to be more.
What was your guess?
36.
I mean, Hillary said 5. I think, so Andrew was our closest guess, but even he was quite far out. I think Andrew guessed, was it 1,200? And actually, it's 2,700 of litres for a single pair of jeans.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And
I thought it was more.
That's litres. What did you think?
I thought it was 15,000.
Because I looked it up and it said 2,700. And then I think it's different in gallons.
Yeah, I think in gallons it was either 50,000 or 15,000. I can't remember which one.
Oh, so Stacey. Yeah, Stacey Dooley did a little experiment where she went out onto the street, a bit like Kathy did.
Oh, yeah.
And got people to empty their shopping bags, and she told them how many litres went into making that clothing.
Oh, yeah.
And she took as a rough guideline 15,000 litres of water to grow the cotton to make a pair of jeans.
Oh, wow.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a 2,700 in a stage.
Maybe we'll have to look into that.
It's a lot.
Yeah, but it's a lot, guys. Bear this in mind.
Three pairs of jeans in the room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm wearing jeans. Oh, so it's only Katie who's not wearing jeans.
I thought about this when Kathy was like, oh, sustainable fashion. And so I'll be talking about it a bit later, but the Stacey Dooley's documentary. Yeah. I was thinking, what can I wear? What can I wear that didn't have any liters?
Well, actually, I am wearing recycled jeans. This is on the Eco Edit on ASOS. So they use this factory in Africa, which makes sure that they're like growing sustainable cotton, and they're using it in a sustainable way. So now I'm a bit more mindful of where I buy my jeans. But I mean, after hearing that it's gallons of water, it's just like mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I think charity shops are my way forward now.
Yeah.
It's gonna have to be. Can't justify it otherwise.
Right, so we're going to play a song now, but don't forget to join the discussion on icradio.com/contact. We'll be reading out some of your comments right after we hear I Want It All by Natalie Taylor on iScience Radio.
I've kept my grip so tight, I won't let anyone get in my way. I want beautiful things, golden rings, golden rings. And I get what I want, I live just to get what I want. And
I want it all.
So that was I Want It All by Natalie Taylor. Taylor.
That's a different artist, yeah. Isn't it? Natalie and Brudia.
So now we're going to hear from Hannah and Katie, who are going to talk to us through some of the environmental issues of fast fashion.
So, hi Kathy. Yeah, I'm Hannah. And as Kathy said, I'm here to talk about the environmental issues that surround fashion. I was inspired to be here today by Eileen Fisher. So she's a clothing industry magnate that said in 2015 that the clothing industry is the second largest polluter in the world, second only to oil. And this absolutely shocked me because kind of before researching any of this, I had no idea about the effects that fashion had on the environment. And as Kathy was talking about earlier, as fashion is becoming cheaper and cheaper, driven by globalization and cheaper labor costs abroad, it's exacerbating these environmental effects. Perhaps the most obvious one is the effect that fashion has on climate change. So from the fossil fuels that are used to transport the clothing, which are increasingly being shipped from vast distances across the planet, from Asia mostly, to the materials that are being used in our clothing. So one of the most commonly used materials is polyester. This is used in things like gym kits and synthetic clothing. And these fibres are derived from oil. So it actually takes 70 million barrels of oil per year to produce virgin polyester, which is devastating that that huge amount of oil is just being used to produce synthetic clothing. But that's not the only effect that fashion has on the environment. Another really common effect of fashion is when we wash our clothing in domestic washing machines. A single item of clothing can release approximately 1,900 fibres into our ocean. These are eaten by plankton, which are then eaten by fish, and then they can end up on our own dinner plates, which is really, really scary. But it's not the only way that fashion contaminates our waterways, though. So fashion is the second largest polluter of clean water globally after agriculture. A particularly bad culprit of this is the cotton industry.
Yes, and this is where I come in. So thank you, Hannah.
No worries.
So yes, I watched the Stacey Dooley documentary.
It was mind-boggling,
Fashion's
yeah.
Dirty Secrets, and I'm probably going to say Stacey Dooley's name about 10 more times on this show. I'm just obsessed with her. But anyway, her documentary, as Kathy was saying, is really, really good. And she did look into the cotton industry a bit deeper. And so she said that it's now one of the biggest culprits in the fashion industry and has become one of the most unsustainable crops abroad. And so it actually totals 43% of all clothing sold, which is quite an extreme figure. But the production process involves pesticides, toxic dyes, and huge amounts of natural resources like water. And Stacey went to Kazakhstan in the documentary to see the Aral Sea, which is about half the size of England in size, which is absolutely huge. And it contains lots of fish, wildlife. It's known for its natural beauty. It used to have loads of tourism there, and it's now a symbol for the devastation that cotton production can cause.
So
in the 1960s it was really big, but then they diverted the rivers feeding the Aral Sea to cotton farms in Uzbekistan, and that meant that the sea was no longer filled, and I think they it shrunk by about the size of Ireland.
Wow. It's now more or less a puddle in comparison to what it was.
Yeah, if you look at the satellite images of it, like the size of it's just decreased and decreased. And now they have some protected bits of it that they kind of built a dam to stop anything else disturbing it. And that it was beautiful. It was really nice. And there was some wildlife there. And they were sort of saying, this is our protection.
But now it's more like a desert, isn't it?
It's a desert. Yeah. They said that there were camels where there should be fish. It's changed the weather for the people living around there. It's now hotter in the summer and colder in the winter. Lots of jobs have been lost. The ecosystem's been disrupted. The vegetation has been lost as well.
Wow.
There are dust storms which contain pesticides, which blow and poison the people and farmland surrounding the Aral Sea. Like the impacts of it is devastating. And I think that's what the documentary is trying to focus on, like appealing to our humanity and seeing what our consumerism is leading to. So that was really
just
awful.
Incredible.
And that she also went to Indonesia. So I think she's done other shows about the fashion industry and kind of focused on the exploitation of workers before. And in Indonesia, they have, you know, that it's a hub for clothes production. Mm. But when she went back this time, she was looking at how the river was used as a sewer. So I think it's called the Sitaram River.
Yeah.
And there are over 400 factories along the river.
Mm-hmm.
And they are all pumping their waste into the river, where people use it to drink from, to wash in, to bathe their clothes in. And Stacey's like went to visit some of the people living along the Sitaram River.
Mm.
And they had really horrible, their skin was looked really sore and red and itchy from it. I mean, there are activists trying to block the pipes along the way.
Yeah.
But they're getting threatened, saying, we'll make you disappear if you continue your work.
Mm.
But it's the pollutants that are in there. And so they took a sample to be tested. And there are apparently toxic levels of mercury, cadmium, lead and arsenic in the water, which can lead to neurological problems for children and adults if consumed.
I can remember she was interviewing one mother and her child, and the mother said that she could only afford clean water to buy for her child, but she had to have the water from the river, which was contaminated, and that was the reality of the situation.
Yeah, she didn't want the baby to suffer like she was. So it was just, you know, that's kind of two sides, the cotton industry, but then the toxic chemicals that released in the production as well. So both have a horrific impact, and again appealing to the humanity there, like as Stacey said, clean water should be a basic human right. Like, why are they not being allowed that?
When and for the sake of fashion
for
as
the
well
sake of fashion. And it does make you feel bad, but I think that's the point. As I was saying earlier, when she went into the streets, I think it was of Glasgow, and tried to tell people how much water was used in their clothes, people said, this makes me really upset, but I just didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was kind of what she was trying to focus on. Like, I'm not trying to shame you for what you're doing, but just trying to educate you instead, which is what this show is trying to do as well.
Yeah, I think it's really only in like the last 2 years that I've ever heard about the environmental effects of fashion. And before that, you don't even think about it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the same, but I kind of only changed my habits, I'd say, after Christmas. And I think it was after watching that documentary, and I was like, whoa, why have I never thought about this?
Yeah.
Why do I go to a shop and just, like, never think about where these clothes come from? It's just, you just don't think about that. And I was the type of person who would have, like, so many ASOS packages coming to my door, like... And my wardrobe is absolutely ram-packed. Like, you can't fit another item in there. Mm.
And returns are also part of the issue. So I watched a BBC, I think it was a Horizon documentary about it, and it was saying that lots of returns, we think we're returning it to them, but it just can't be processed. It's just not economically viable. And so they just literally, it just goes straight into landfill.
No.
Which is so bad. Yeah, it's terrifying. So I don't know, even just buying it, that's an issue in itself. You can't just, terrible.
Do you know what, saying it's changed your habits, we had a discussion when, because you knew that you wanted to do a show on sustainable fashion, so we talked about it before, and even then, like, trying to, you know, change your habits, the small things that you could do, like the returns thing, is really interesting to hear. So I'm trying to stop online shopping.
Absolutely.
And that now ties in with how you could maybe stop the returns processes to maybe don't online shop as much. Just, you know, we don't need clothes.
Yeah, see, I am still online shopping, but I'm only shopping from sites where I can look at their sustainability, like...
Practices,
yeah.
Where do you find the information?
So, this is... I was going to talk to you about this later on, but I found it on this app called Good On You, and I basically... It has, like, some suggestions on which... websites are sustainable, and it actually rates them. So it says they're great, they're good, that they can do better, or they're not very good, and the final is we avoid. So that's where I find my information.
Yeah, that's really... I had no idea that there was anything like that out there, so that's really valuable.
Yeah,
definitely,
we'll be
do.
Talking about it more later on.
Awesome.
But Is there anything else from the show that really stuck out to you?
So actually, on the topic of speaking about specific retailers, in the documentary, Stacey obviously was trying to get comments from people from some of the big brands, New Look, Primark, big culprit here, fast fashion, H&M, ASOS. She was trying to reach out to them and she got virtually no comments from them at all. She went to the Copenhagen Fashion Summit. That was it. And she tried to speak to them and they kept cancelling on her. She tried to follow them around and they're just saying, oh no, I can't give a comment, I don't talk to broadcasters. And she sort of said, this is just so frustrating because they're here at the summit to talk about sustainability. I'm here to talk about sustainability. Why won't they share that with me? And the only people that did was someone from Levi's. And he was sort of saying, we're trying to change our practices to reduce the water that we use in our manufacturing process. And he said, well, when we find out, we're going to share it with everyone. Why wouldn't we share something that helps the environment? And so I think they were trying to do something where the cotton from clothes that had been recycled, they could break it down and build it back up into something that was like cotton type material. Again, but which uses zero water.
Right.
So they're trying to sort of develop a scientific...
And when you think about going into a Levi's shop, how many pairs of jeans are in there? How many litres of water is that?
Which maybe is why they're maybe the forerunners to try to change this. And maybe that's why they've put in the money, time, effort to do that so far. But it did make me think better of Levi's. Because considering they were the only ones that spoke to her. And even then, you know, you would hear her like ring people up. People, they would hang up on her. And I mean, I'm sure.
And these are big businesses.
She said it's like comms people and they're not communicating.
We've actually got a couple of questions from our listeners.
So
listener one, what about the plastic fibres in clothes that are washed out during cleaning and find their way into the marine environment? Listener one, we have already covered this, but we can answer that again. So she ends the question, or he, should all clothes labels have a percentage of plastic content?
Oh, that's a very interesting question. So as I said before, every time that you wash a garment that has polyester in it, then it releases on average 1,900 synthetic fibres into your domestic washing machine. These are too small to be picked up in our sewage and our water treatment plants, and so they work out their way into the ocean, become consumed by plankton, and work their way up the food chain onto our dinner plates. And I really like your suggestion about the percentage of plastic, but I think that's kind of already in the label. The percentage of polyester is plastic. And so that information is there, but I think there needs to be a greater awareness that this is happening. Because I just don't think a lot of people even realise that these clothings, which often feel really soft and great, can do that.
I think polyester sort of doesn't really translate to this is the amount of plastic in. So I think there needs to be some greater education.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, our second question from Gina. Can you see a way to protect the livelihoods of cotton farmers but also reduce the impact of fashion on the environment?
That's a really interesting question. There is a thing, such a thing called organic cotton, or ways in which cotton could be produced that does actually reduce the water impact. So maybe it's just trialing that elsewhere. I know there's a huge thing, even cotton farmers struggle to make ends meet because of the cotton crop throughout the year, so genetic modification is actually quite prominent in the production of the cotton crops anyway. So maybe it's just promoting the
I also think there needs to be greater regulations, because I think big businesses are really exploiting the small farmers. And if there were greater regulations to say, you know, you have to, there's a minimum wage that you can pay and there's a minimum price that you can buy for this material, then there would be sort of a better practice going ahead. But because we live in a capitalistic society, I mean, these issues aren't really at the top of the agenda for our politicians.
Because that's what they were saying. They were saying, well, if the price is right, they're going to say yes. Whereas if you put more regulation on that price, then it wouldn't be as quick to say yes, but it would still even out.
Yeah, and these farmers don't really have that much power, because if they say no, they'll be like, okay, fine, we'll go elsewhere.
Yeah. Just find a cheaper.
Yeah. And then, I mean, that's the managers of the factories, let alone, like, we're not even discussing the actual workers mm-hmm. who are paid as little as $2 for a day's work.
Yeah. And I think even organic cotton still has loads of environmental. I think it actually takes more water to produce organic cotton because you lose so much of the crop because you can't use pesticides. And so, yeah, so even when you're thinking about buying something, even if it has the organic label, it's so much better to just go to your local charity shop. I think any kind of new product is just kind of perpetuating this whole crisis.
Yeah, but then I guess also fashion is a way of expressing yourself, and I guess
people
really want to, I mean, part of like buying new clothes is for enjoyment. So I think in my view, I feel like we can still buy new clothes, but you've just got to know where they've came from, how they were made, and who made them.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's just gone 5:30 here on IC Radio. You're listening to iScience. Time for a musical break now. But we'll be back right after Don't Feel Like Crying by Sigrid.
I should be ordering takeout, sitting on my couch, that's what you do. I know I should be holding my feelings, staring at the ceiling, but here's the truth. Wallowing in it would be such a waste. That isn't good.
So that was Don't Feel Like Crying by Sigrid. I can just see that Hillary and Andrew are dancing along to that and actually didn't realise the song was ending, maybe? Anyway, so we've just got a couple more questions. Listener one, again, thank you. How does bamboo clothing compare to cotton? Is one better than the other? And another question by Shocked101. But if you buy 100% cotton, you're contributing to the cotton problem. And if you buy synthetic, you're contributing to the plastic and the water problem, which should be our priority. So both those questions are kind of tackling the same issue. Has anyone got any thoughts?
So there are alternative fibres that you can use. So like bamboo is a really good example. Bamboo can be really sustainable. So it requires no fertiliser and self-generates from its own roots. So if you were to compare this to cotton cultivation, you don't need any of that water, those pesticides, those labour. So the advantages here seem quite clear, but actually it's quite nuanced. So the majority of bamboo is grown in China. So the conditions of the workers are pretty dubious. We don't know much about that. We don't know how intensively the bamboo is being harvested. Obviously, this is a pretty crucial food for our beloved pandas. Mm. And also, we don't know if pesticides are being used anyway just to kind of enhance that growing process.
I also read that actually pesticides are used. So when you have the bamboo plant there, actually you need a lot of chemicals and pesticides to break it down into a usable fabric.
Okay.
Whereas, okay, organic cotton's bad in the beginning to grow it, but when it's grown, it's pretty much ready to weave. So mm-hmm. I think the pesticide, chemical and toxins just happen at a different time.
Mm. Yeah, but there are other alternative fabrics that you can use. But there's also things, so if you were going to buy synthetic clothing, you can buy special bags. I think they're called Guppy Friends, and you put your synthetic clothing in those bags, and that captures all of those synthetic fibers within that bag, stops it from entering that domestic washing system. But again, pretty nuanced if it's actually a good thing, because they're being made in China at the moment and the conditions of the workers are a bit dubious once again. So yeah.
It's a tricky terrain.
It is a tricky terrain.
I feel like you were saying a bit earlier, it's only really come into, you know, the focus in the last two or so years, and perhaps of more years, and put up the priority list alongside plastic pollution, then maybe more solutions and more fabrics will be developed.
Yeah.
Katie, weren't you going to... I think you're going to mention how fashion influencers can play a big role in raising awareness. I think that's a pretty interesting topic.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably all sick of hearing my voice at this moment in time.
Passionate.
But yes, so in the Stacey Dooley, is that number four? I've mentioned her name. Stacey Dooley, in her documentary, was trying to think of ways in which we can change the attitudes of people towards fashion in sort of same way of like raising awareness of the issue. And she spoke to fashion influencers. So on their media channels, they kind of go on big hauls, sort of Zoella type that we probably watched when we were a bit younger, Rachel.
Yeah, when I was like 13.
Who are your go-tos?
Zoella was definitely my go-to.
Zoella was the go-to.
Any hauls.
So I decided to rewatch one of Zoella's hauls from 2015, vintage Lord. Zoella. It has over 4 million views of her Primark haul. And I went through it painfully, and I gathered some quotes that I thought kind of encompassed our attitudes towards fast fashion. And this is in no way a shaming exercise, because we've all thought it, we've all been there. Mm-hmm. It's more just this is part of the problem. So one of her quotes was, "They're quite thin," about pyjama bottoms. "You can never have too many pyjama bottoms," was another one.
Oh dear.
"You can get lots for your money," from Primark. "Crochet is going to be big," so this kind of like feeling on trend all the time. "I always see people on Instagram and Tumblr wearing this, so I got it." Mm-hmm. "There's a maximum amount you can wash them before they become bubbled, so you need to keep picking them up." Which doesn't sound great, does it? "Bargainous," not necessarily a bad one, but
good word.
Maybe, yeah, I didn't even know it was a word. "I need to at least buy something with tassels, this is going to be big," again. Another one, "I wanted one in white, but they didn't have it, so I just got it in black." But, you know, it's not what you're looking for. You don't need it then. "This one I'm not..." Oh, this is her quote as well. "This one I'm not sure about, so you're going to have to let me know." She's sort of buying something that she's not sure she's going to wear. "Oh, I've just realised I've picked up the wrong size. So what's going to happen to that item?"
Yeah. Return it and then
"Where them. Would we wear them? I don't really care." And that was talking about jelly shoes. And then I watched one of her more recent hauls 3 years later, and she still bought jelly shoes. So what happened to that original pair, Zoella? That's what I want to know.
Oh,
God. And then other quotes was, "I've sort of forgotten what's in here. I forgot I bought these." And perhaps the quote that just kind of encompasses it all, "I wanted something new." Sorry, that was a long list. She had a lot of material. Yeah. 20 minutes those videos are.
Wow.
I feel like shops like Primark are kind of a huge culprit, but
consumer catnip how it was described in the documentary.
I can remember when my cousins came over from Switzerland, like one of the things that they wanted to do was go to Primark because they don't have anything like that there, and like it's just like an experience. You can buy things for so cheap and just not care.
And they're just strewn all over the floor, like when you go in.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, it's pretty...
There's always a queue.
There's always a queue.
I also wonder why people go for those. I mean, because they're cheap, that could be a good thing, because they're such a bargain. And if maybe you don't have that much money, that is, like, the only option. Yeah. Or not only option, but one of the options you can go for. Because I feel like it's also kind of privileged to say we can spend more money for better clothes, but obviously not everyone can do that.
Yeah, that's very true. Mm. And the sustainable clothing does come with that additional price tag. Mm. So,
it's a difficult cycle.
I think that there are different people's... different people's situations, but there are still ways in which you could do that. So only buying clothes that are sort of necessary or that you're going to wear
more than
once. Mm. So adopting a new mindset is perhaps
I do think this is ridiculous.
Rachel, you were going to talk to us about some of the social impacts of fast fashion. Are you able to?
Yeah, should I talk about that now?
Right,
so the fashion industry is massive. You probably know millions of people. No, you don't know millions of people, but there are millions of people who have some sort of connection to the industry in one way or another. And these are some just facts about the fashion industry. So there's roughly 40 million garment workers in the world today. Many of them don't share the same rights and protections as people in the Western world do. They're also some of the lowest paid workers in the world, and roughly 85% of workers are women, so less privileged sort of part of society. And we constantly see the exploitation of cheap labor and violation of workers' rights and human rights in many developing countries where we make a lot of these clothes, so in China, Bangladesh, Indonesia. So more recently, there was the Rana Plaza collapse in Bangladesh.
Yeah.
So the building house, a clothing factory, and it collapsed because of several structural failures, such as building on a filled-in pond, which compromised structural integrity. They converted it from commercial use initially to an industrial use to make clothes, and an addition of 3 floors above the original permit. So the building owners were actually originally warned about these problems with the building when cracks appeared the day before the collapse. But then the owners was like, it's fine, everyone has to come back to work the next day anyway. And the building collapsed the morning and the day after. There were over 1,100 people killed and 2,500 people injured. But despite this, that year, the biggest fast fashion brands actually had their best year yet.
And they did. I think that says it all, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Just because they don't have any liability over what happens in the factory, just because they're in a different country. It's the factory itself. But obviously, if there's such a big company, global fashion brands are now a part of a $3 trillion industry per year. So I think they have a responsibility or they have to do something to combat these.
I think that factory housed some quite prominent bands. I think brands.
Wow.
No, not musical. including Mango. I can't remember any of the others, but I mean, there were some,
Mango, I would think, is probably a higher end.
Exactly.
I would want to go there for something more sustainable, nicer than my Primark.
It's association that if you pay more for a product, then it's probably going to have a better sustainable track. But actually, I mean, as we heard earlier about Burberry burning thousands of their products,
so ridiculous.
Instead of making them a discounted price, because that goes against their brand image, which is just incredible that we live in that kind of world.
And I think companies like Primark, because they are so cheap, they're scrutinized the most, and we look at them and we use them as the example, and that kind of allows companies like Burberry and Mango and all of these other ones to get away with it, when actually they're just as culpable, if not more, in many cases. They're not in the spotlight.
I don't know where I read this from, but I think there was a post online saying big brands, they usually buy a lot of clothes for it comes at a cheaper price because they can sell less of them for a higher profit, but then bin the rest of them and still make a big profit rather than buy less of the same item and sell all of that.
Because so, like wholesale,
exactly.
Buying it.
That's ridiculous.
So annoying.
It just feels like the wealth is just not equally or rightly distributed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a difficult topic. Anyway, so there is a lot to consider. However, after the next song, we will be discussing what steps you can take to reduce your environmental impact. And to do that, we need some enthusiasm and excitement. So the next song we're going to play for you is Call Me Mother by the infamous RuPaul.
Guess who back in the house? Heels click clacking about. Fine, fresh, feminine style. 211, I'm divine. So heavenly, gentlemen, sweating. It's down, across the board, no doubt. Body like wow. Pussy about to end this trap. Titty so plentiful, fish queen. Jezebel should be criminal. Don't make sense for a bitch to be this endowed. Rock to the side, what is that sound? Watch me drop, drop, drop it to the ground. Wait for the four, drop to the floor. Add up the ten to get the score. I've been that bitch, yes, I love that drama. Fishy, feminine, up and coming. From the Clintons to the Obama. Now they call me mother. Jaded cream bitch, I love that drama. Fishy feminine up and comer. From the Clintons to the Obamas, I keep it tight. Now they call me mother. Mother. Automatic, supersonic, I'm a sassatron. And I ain't looking up to anyone, the gam's alone. And I'm ready to shake the jelly when the jelly's on. The kind of thing that all the fellas make advances on. I'm only getting out of bed for 20 million. Now get your camera phone, cause in a minute I'm about to be on. Here come that girl, uh-oh, shit, what up? It's Squirrel. Yeah, 12, that's the bread I'm hustling. Flood to crush, she's the big shot caller.
Get, run, over.
None of these bitches is country like blue. Clucking me chickens, I'm plucking they plumes. Running my business, is balls coming through. When I step in, you know well what it do. Y'all know where what it do. None of these bitches is fucking with me. Running my businesses, don't need a witness. When I step in, they know well what it do. When I step in, they know well what it do. Yeah, bitch, she done already done had hers. She been done had hers.
So that was Call Me Mother by RuPaul. Right, so now we're going to talk about some tips, to shop smarter. Does anyone have any tips that we can share to our listeners?
Let's do it.
Oh.
I have a new rule. So I did it inspired by Marie Kondo, as I spoke about on last week's show. Hillary's smiling, she knows all about it. And Andrew as well. And we learned a lot of interesting things about how they lived at university. So inspired by Marie Kondo, I did a huge wardrobe clear out and I pretty much got rid of about 50% of my wardrobe because I just didn't wear it. Mm-hmm. And so my new rule is, if it's not 100%, don't buy it. So if I'm not going to pick up that item and think I'm going to wear that every day, it's not worth it because I already have clothes to wear. Mm. That's kind of like the 100% rule. When I wear it enough, kind of my new motto to adopt.
Lucy Siegel suggested, will you wear it 30 times?
Yeah.
So that's the new rule sort of to go by.
Great tip.
Yeah.
Great tip.
Yeah,
100%. My tip would be, once I've decided that I don't want that clothing, then either donating it to a charity shop or making sure it goes to a recycling centre. Mm. I've done a bit of research into recycling centres and I can't actually figure out how they do it and how good they are. But hopefully they reuse that cotton and that saves on those intensive processes in the beginning. Mm. And shops like H&M are operating a recycling scheme.
Yeah. I think it also depends on the material of the clothes. Because I can remember from the True Cost documentary, the guy working at the recycling plant was saying it's more difficult to recycle clothes now because the clothes they're getting in are of lower quality. So they just can just go straight to waste.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it really depends what material you're throwing away.
Wow.
My tip, well, not really a tip yet, but I'm gonna learn how to sew, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe mend my clothes a bit better, or some like simple tailoring stuff for clothes that like I buy that maybe don't fit or maybe got like shrunk in the wash or what's the other word, stretched, ripped and stuff. I think if I learn how to mend my own clothes and make it fit myself, it'd be a lot better, and better for me because it'll fit.
Has anyone watched Wild Child?
Yes.
Do you remember when they go to the charity shop and then like they make their new outfits and like,
and they looked so great.
Yeah.
That was like my absolute goals as a teenager.
Absolutely. I was so inspired after that.
Who are we?
Yeah. I wanted to buy like more clothes from fashion shops and then like make them to fit, but I just did not know how to sew, so that was a short-lived dream.
Yeah.
But you said it earlier, just go buying clothes from charity shops as opposed to on the high street. Mm. If you did want something new for your wardrobe, then it's a really great place to do it.
Yeah. Mm. You can get some really good clothes as well from charity shops.
Absolutely.
Some really high-end brands as well.
Yeah, especially if you go in South Kent.
Yeah.
I mean, the charity shops there, you're shopping Chanel and Dior and you're paying like £5 for it. Yeah. It's great. You get all the benefits and you get much, hopefully.
But it's only worth buying if it's 100%.
Yeah, 100%.
Will you wear it 30 times?
Yeah.
Or more?
And if you don't, take it back to the charity shop. Don't put it in the bin.
Another suggestion is to break the cycle. So the traditional spring, summer, autumn, winter of International Fashion Weeks is just for show. Zara, the Spanish fast fashion, broke the mold, introducing mini seasons every week. So 50 to 100 new micro seasons a year is the new normal. So slow down your fashion cycle.
Yeah.
That's just it's just crazy.
That is crazy.
But it's also like the immediacy of it as well, isn't it? It's like, buy it now, you'll regret it, and everything like that. And that's just, she called it as well, Lucy Siegel in the documentary, she called it consumer catnip. And I've said it before, but I thought that was a really like good term for what the fast fashion brands need to be culpable for.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think there's a new scheme going on where it's like to rent your clothes.
So you go to this
shop or online shop and you can rent them for a smaller price of what you would pay for 3 or 4 days and then return, and then so like the actual cycle of the clothes are being worn more and more.
Yeah, I think that's a really brilliant idea. So my sister looked into doing that for like her prom dress, because that's something that realistically you're probably never going to have an occasion where you get to wear that again.
I've only worn my prom dress once.
Yeah,
which
mine
is
too,
just
and
so
it's
sad.
Still in my wardrobe, gathering dust. Yeah. I know, very sad. But like, if I'd known about something like that, I totally would have rented it instead, because it just makes so much more sense, both on your bank account and for the environment.
The other suggestion was detox your wardrobe, which Katie's already covered. And also, join the fashion revolution. Be the change you want to see in your wardrobe. To paraphrase Gandhi. Fashionrevolution.org represents millions of consumers who want change, and also commemorates Rana Plaza by putting pressure on the brands to increase transparency and empowers consumers to be inquisitive about who made their clothes. I think that's really like a fundamental attitude that we need to encourage. It's like, when you buy something, you're not just buying that product, you're buying everything that came to make that product.
Yeah.
So you've got to think about who made it, where's it come from, how long has it taken, you know, the actual environmental tract of it coming from that place to this shop.
Yeah, definitely. And the information about fashion and the environmental and social effects is changing every day. In the last 2 years, it's kind of exploded, and I'm sure we'll see more. And as that question said, like, which is the lesser of two evils? Well, we're still learning more and more, so just keep on doing your research and finding out about it. Download the apps that are suggested to you and things like that, because we can all do our bit to make a difference. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think it's just not being sort of dictative with what we're saying. We just kind of want to encourage a new sort of way of thinking. But then also we've got to recognize the problems with, actually, as Rachel was saying earlier, with people who can't afford.
Yeah, that's very true.
So it's doing what you can.
Yeah, doing what you can, exactly, and making that connection with the people that made your clothes as well. Really, really important.
Yeah. And as I mentioned earlier, there's this great app called Good On You. You can just download it and you can search which brands you like and see their sort of environmental sort of status. So we can do that now. Okay, someone give me a brand.
ASOS.
ASOS.
Mm. Oh.
Okay, so they are currently rated, it's a start. ASOS has set a greenhouse gas target but has made no commitment to eliminate hazardous chemicals. So then it talks you through three ratings, labour, environment and animal. On the labour, it says it's a start, environment, not good enough, animal, it's a start. So yeah, even though I was mentioning that eco edit from ASOS, this is why I have a problem with it. I don't know whether I can then not buy from that brand, even if I'm buying like an environmentally sort of friendly material, like piece of clothing, when they actually sell so many fast fashion pieces of clothing.
Yeah,
it's there's so many questions to ask yourself. But yeah, it's just being a bit more mindful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's what you said earlier as well. Like, we should be promoting those efforts. So if you are gonna buy clothes, then try and, if you can, buy it from those eco edits and things like sustainable H&M, because that is going to feed into their consumer choices, and that's going to help them figure out, like, actually this is a really popular market, and hopefully they'll develop that even further and realize that it's popular and worthwhile.
Also, there are some a lot smaller brands who sort of deserve support.
Definitely.
There's a brand called Know the Origin, which is a UK brand, and so when you go on their website, it's quite interesting because I'm used to like ASOS, where you can go skip to like pages and pages of different clothes, whereas Know the Origin only have like one page for tops or one page for trousers, like six or seven items. Like, it's sort of even encouraging on their website, you know, you don't need that much.
It's also been realistic. Like, I know on the Stacey Dooley documentary, everyone they spoke to, they're like, we're still going to shop. Like, that's not going to change. Stacey's like, oh, I like retail therapy because it's an activity and it makes me feel better. It helps me to relax. And, it, you know, that it is. Like, I also like retail therapy in a way. But like you said, it's either being mindful or, for me, it's not necessarily that, because, you know, we're students and we can't necessarily always afford to buy the most expensive item. But it's just that mindfulness of, am I going to wear it? I bought a dress from Primark the other day for £5. And yes, it's Primark. Yes, it was £5. But I saw it and I was like, I'm going to get so much wear out of that dress. So that is worth it. You know, that sort of just change of mindset.
Yeah, definitely. Just being aware.
Aware.
Mindful. Aware.
I think that's what we need to do, because society is so like consumeristic nowadays. We just, it's the whole sort of society mindset. It's not just fashion. It's other stuff like food and buying cars. People go,
there's so much to be mindful of.
Yeah. And there's such a lack of that connection. Like, you never think about where the food on your plate has come from and the clothes on your body have come from and things like this. And yeah, like your smartphone, what all the different components of that, where those have come from. Yeah, making those connections, awareness.
Yeah.
That's key.
So any last quick tips before we end the show? Got one.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, it's going to have to be a good one.
Should I write any others down?
Go to charity shops.
Go to charity shops.
That's what we're
going
to do.
Tell your friends.
100%.
Tell your
spread
friends.
The message far and wide.
Okay. That's just about all we've got time for today. What a great discussion we have had. Mm-hmm. So thanks so much to our panellists. Thanks, Rachel, Katie and Hannah for joining me today. And thanks to my wonderful producers, Hilary and Andrew. We'll be back next time. But in the meantime, follow us on Twitter at iSciencemedia and iSciencemag.co.uk. And don't forget to join us next week right here on IC Radio, Monday at 5 p.m. Thanks, guys. See you next week. Yay!